4. Let's read our text, if we would, to begin with. Verse 41. And Jesus sat over against the treasury and beheld how the people cast money into the treasury, and how many that were rich cast in much. And there came a certain poor widow, and she threw in 2 mites, which make a farthing. And he called unto him his disciples, and said unto them, Verily I say to you, that this poor widow has cast more in than all they which have cast into the treasury. For all they did cast in of their abundance, but she of her want did cast in all that she had, even all her living. This account is found in here in Mark and also in Luke. Kind of Luke says basically the same thing, not any additional information. When my sons were young, Susan and I have made some attempt to raise our children to know God, to love Jesus Christ, to recognize their, not just their need for Him, but their obligations to Him. And so try to teach them, you know, a lot of different things and take advantage of opportunities to do so. And I remember on one occasion, and I started to tell this story just kind of in a generic hypothetical story, but I want to tell it personally because it did happen. And I can't remember all the exact details, but this is basically what happened. We had some friends, right now I don't even remember who it was, but something in someone's life that was close to, some type of catastrophe happened, and there was a financial need that they had. And we had talked about it. Other Christian people that we knew had gave to try to help meet, to leave the financial burden that this family was under through what had taken place. And our boys were, I don't know how old they were, 10 or 12 years old, I suppose, and had saved a little money and had probably $100 or $200 of their own that they had accumulated from working. And you heard us talking about what was going on. Me and Susan were planning on giving and helping. And one of them came to us and gave us their money. And gave us all of their money. And I knew that 2 days before that wasn't what they intended on doing with that money. But here they are giving it all. I don't know how you would have felt in that situation, but there was a tremendous sense of, I don't know what you would call it, satisfaction, admiration, that I had. And this didn't just happen once, but I can remember another feeling that I had that I want to share with you, and I think I may have discussed this with my sons. And I may have been wrong. You can decide that for yourself as I tell the story. But, you know, immediately I thought, is this the right thing for them to do? To give everything that they have, all the money that they have, not everything they have, but all the money they had to meet this need. And several things were kind of going through my mind. You can't, and I say you can't, maybe maybe I just don't have the faith or whatever it is to do it, but my thoughts were, you can't really do this in real life. Just because this person has a need, I can't just sell everything I have and meet their need. I can't give everything that I've got. That was one thought that I had. Another thought that I had was that the giving was a result of an impulsive, emotional attachment to these people. And we don't need to make decisions just impulsively. We don't need to make them emotionally, necessarily. And I think I had sort of a conversation along those lines with the boys. And basically, what I was doing was trying to talk them out of giving the way they were giving. That's the bottom line. I thought I might have good reasons for doing that. Perhaps not. That came to my mind as I look at this story, this account, a true happening that happened. Here is Jesus in the temple watching as people gave. Now, I've tried to recreate this scene in my mind, and I don't really know how that it looked. Supposedly there were several offering cups, as you will, whatever they were. They were shaped supposedly more like a trumpet, with a big open mouth, and the people came and put in. I don't know if the people were acknowledged, or if there was an acknowledgement of who gave what, or I don't know if the people were giving in such a way that people could obviously see what they were giving. I don't know if Jesus was standing there, doing like this, looking as they gave. I have a hard time knowing exactly what it looked like. But Jesus says there are some people here who are giving, and they're giving a lot. They have a lot to give, and they're giving a lot. But here is this one woman, a widow, who puts in the two of the smallest coins she could put in. Jesus says, hey, take note here. This woman has given more than all the rest. Because they have given out of the abundance. She's given everything. Everything. She's given all that she has. What she needs to exist, she's giving. This is perhaps, if not the only, at least the primary account that we remember from the Bible that's given to us. It's been passed down through the centuries as an example of giving. It wasn't a large gift, but it was a gift of everything. I want to look at, to point out two or three things from this text and just from life about giving this morning. The first one is this, that Christ-like giving may be sacrificial. Christ-like giving may be sacrificial. And I want to say, first of all, that giving is still giving, whether it's sacrificial or not. If you own $500 and you give it, you give your possessions to someone else, it doesn't matter if you have $5 million more, you still give. Giving is giving, though it may not be sacrificial. For most of us, though, giving is not sacrificial. I want to read a paragraph to you that says it better than I can. In regard to this account that Jesus is telling us about, he says, the amount of the gift never matters so much as its cost to the giver. Not the size of the gift, but the sacrifice. Real generosity gives until it hurts. For many of us, it is a real question if ever our giving to God's work is any sacrifice at all. Are you listening? Let me read that again. For many of us, it is a real question if ever our giving to God's work is any sacrifice at all. Few people will do without their pleasures to give a little more to the work of God. It may be well a sign of the decadence of the church and the failure of our Christianity that gifts have to be coaxed out of church people, and that often they will not give at all unless they get something back in the way of entertainment or of goods. There can be few of us who can read this story in Mark without shame. How often is our giving sacrificial? Sacrificing our pleasures. How often do we sacrifice our pleasures in order that instead of spending our money on our pleasures, we give them up in order to give to God's work? It's not very often, I would imagine, that many of us, if any of us, sacrifice our pleasures. Even less often is it that we would sacrifice our necessities. As a matter of fact, if you think about it, what are your necessities? Think of food. All right? If I gave up, let's suppose that after church today, Susan and I were going to go out to eat, and it's going to cost us $20, let's say. Instead of us eating out, I gave $20 and we just went without lunch. Have I sacrificed my necessities? No. Because I'm still living. That particular meal was not a necessity. Sacrificing necessities. Christ-like giving may be sacrificial. Not always, but it may be. Number two, Christ-like giving has a certain recklessness to it. Now let's think about this one for a minute. Christ-like giving has a certain recklessness to it. First of all, giving when it is unreasonable. Think about that. Here at the church, we have a food bank, food pantry, whatever you want to call it, that we give out food. We have learned, and it doesn't take you long to learn this. This church has been in existence for 15 or 16 years, and the food pantry in existence for all but the first year or two, if I remember correctly. And it didn't take long to learn that we can give out a lot of food. We could give out a lot more money. But our resources are limited. So very quickly, we had to make a policy. We don't give money. We might give money to help people in our church that have needs, but a person just walking in off the street, if we gave them money every time someone come in, we would have nothing to do anything else with. That is reasonable, or at least we thought so. It's a reasonable policy to have. But sometimes giving has a certain recklessness about it where you give in spite of the fact that it seems so unreasonable. The thought is always in your mind that people, you give them money, they're going to waste it, they're going to spend it on alcohol and cigarettes and drugs and whatever else, and it's not going to be used for what it needs to be used for. Those thoughts, kind of things come to your mind. Here, just an example of that. A month or two ago, There was a lady that came by the church one Sunday morning before we start practice at 9 o'clock, the worship team. And about once or twice a year, this will happen. A stranger will come up to the church, see some vehicles here, and it'll be just the worship team and your practice, and they will have a need. And they're usually wanting to go somewhere, you know, to Florida, to Timbuktu, wherever, and needing some money for gas. And, you know, I try to feel them out. You know, I try to do what's reasonable and to see what's going on. And usually I end up going across the street with them and filling their cart with gas. All right, nowadays I wouldn't fill it up. With the price of gas, it'd be a less than a full tank. But you know, usually I would do that. A couple months ago, this lady came in and told me this story. And she stayed for church that day. She told me the story of they'd moved here from Pennsylvania. And her husband had been promised a job in the gas industry here. And they got here and he couldn't get the job because they didn't know it, but he had a felony in his past history 10 or 15 years earlier. So he couldn't get the job. Well, their home life was apparently very dysfunctional and very chaotic and all this kind of stuff anyway. And he gets mad, and his sister from St. Louis comes down and gets him, carries him back with her, and just leaves her and her two boys here. No money, no job, nothing. And they're trying to get back to Pennsylvania where they moved from, where they have relatives. She told me all this right out here before church started, and I was thinking, this doesn't really sound like something somebody just make up. You know, she seems pretty sincere, pretty reasonable. I said, well, you know, we usually don't give out anything but food. I said, I can't decide this. The elders got to be here and make this decision. I said, would you be willing to stay, you know, through church and just let us talk to your church? She said, sure, that's no problem. So she stayed. She seemed to enjoy the service, and we gave her some money, enough money for gas to get to Pennsylvania. I gave her my phone numbers, asked her to call me when she got there. And I pretty well promptly forgot about it. A week or two later, I get a phone call. And it's this lady. You know where she's at? In jail. Not in Pennsylvania. In Van Buren County. In fact, she was out of jail at the time, but she got in some type of trouble. I don't know if it's hot checks or she's talking about it. Obviously, she was innocent, but it just didn't work out. I don't know what happened to our $360, but it didn't work out. Should we have given her the money? I don't know. But when you try to help people, sometimes you're going to get burned. And it is better to get burnt trying to help somebody than to ensure that you will not get burnt and come across to people as cold, as hateful. I don't know what words you might would use. Sometimes you have to be a little reckless with your giving. It may mean giving up control. In fact, it will mean giving up control of your possessions when you give. You're entrusting somebody else to use them and to make decisions with them. I read an email. I want to think it's one of those emails that, you know, some of you may have forwarded to me. I'm not sure where I read it. But this is something interesting. They gave some of the big organizations that are charitable organizations like Salvation Army, American Red Cross, United Way, I can't think of what some others are, but it's five or six of them, and gave you some information about these organizations, the salaries of some of the executives that head them up. It was pretty eye-opening. Some of them, I'm not going to name names because I don't remember for sure, but about half of them, the chief executive officer, CEO of these organizations, these charitable organizations, make in the hundreds of thousands of dollars a year themselves. And there are some reputable organizations that everybody is a volunteer. Or if there are some salary positions, but they're $20,000, $30,000, $40,000 salary. It was an interesting thing, and it told me, you know, there are some groups that are better to give my money to than others. Check it out. Giving as if there were no tomorrow. At least that's the impression you get from this story here, that this widow lady is giving all that she has with little regard, a reckless abandon to how she's going to live tomorrow or the next week or so. Number one, sacrificial or Christ-like giving may be sacrificial. Number two, Christ-like giving has a certain recklessness to it. Number three, everyone needs to give. These are kind of some application here. Everyone needs to give. You may be poor as you can be, but you need to give. You need to develop a habit of giving, and it needs to be a habit, because if it's impulsive, sometimes you may forget. You know what usually happens in a church when someone, they regularly give in their offering to their church, and they miss a Sunday because they're sick or whatever? You know what happens is more often than not? The next Sunday that they're back, do you think they give what they ordinarily would have given the week before had they been there? They don't. It's a habit. It's a priority of how we give. Second thing, plan to give. And this, the tighter your budget is, the more planning to give is critical for you. When Susan and I were first married, we don't have a whole lot of money now. We've got a little more than we had then. Then it was, paycheck to paycheck. And I wanted to be faithful in giving. And the only way, or the best way, I should say, for me to do it is when I sit down to pay bills, I wrote what I was going to give to the church or wherever I was giving it first. Because if I waited until I paid all the bills that I could pay, I would talk myself out of giving. So I would give first. If you don't have, if you're so tight that you cannot give, set aside a quarter, something. Do not go without giving something. You might be surprised how much you can give. The next thing I want to talk about, producing. The need to produce. Everybody needs to be productive in their life. Fathers, mothers, children, grandparents, retired people, I don't care who you are, we need to live a productive life from day one till the end of the last day. Be productive. This is a little bit of a plug for the small group study that I've got coming up, Whatever Happened to Penny Candy. But he makes a statement there, and I want you to listen to this statement. Human survival depends upon humans producing more than they consume. Did you get that? Human survival depends upon human beings producing more than they consume. Think about your life. Can you consume more than you produce? You can for a while. You can until you max out your credit cards. You can until you cannot borrow any more from anybody anywhere. But at some point, somebody else has to produce more to make up for your consuming more. Produce with a purpose to give. We talked about this a while back in from the book of Ephesians. Working and producing for the sole reason to be able to give to God's work. We have a hard time just seeing the difference between our needs and our wants. Let me ask you a couple of questions. Do you need air conditioning? I see some no's. I heard my wife's voice say yes. Do you need air conditioning? No, not really. Does my wife need a washing machine? All the women's going, yeah. All the men just afraid to move. A few days ago, I had my tractor out, scooping the snow off the driveway. My tractor is a two-wheel drive. As long as it was on about 6 inches of snow, it would go okay. But it got down to the packed down stuff. It'd just sit there and spin them big old back tires, big old knobby tires. You know, supposed to look like they'd go through anything. And I have just about, by the time I got through messing around and trying to do something with it, I decided I need a four-wheel drive tractor.
Yes, you do.
See? After talking to Susan about it, I decided I'd need one. She needed something else too. So, but a need. Needs and wants. There are so many things that are make our life easier. And some of them we would be hard pressed to do without. Some of them it would take a great adjustment of our the way we live to do without them. I don't hardly see how I could go without a vehicle. But I see people riding bicycles down the road occasionally. I see people walk. I don't see how in July I can go without air conditioning. But I can remember not having air conditioning. Needs and wants. I had a guy tell me this statement. I want you to think about it. We're talking about this kind of this subject, a little bit different subject. They made the statement, they said, I think that everybody is entitled to a certain standard of living. What do you think about that? Is everybody entitled to a certain standard of living? I don't think so. I don't think so. And if they were, whose standard is it? Whose? Bill Gates' standard of living? That's what you're entitled to? Entitlements. I'm not sure what this person actually had in mind, but the direction they're going with their thinking, I would imagine that they like the concept of spreading the wealth quite a bit. Reckon? And number four, at times you may have a moral obligation to give. Now, think about this. Giving. I own something. It's mine. Can I be morally obligated to give it? Let me tell you a little story. This happens. It's not real common, but it happens. See what you think. Let's suppose that for whatever the circumstances, I find myself in the middle of a wilderness, lost. And I've been lost for several days. When I went on this excursion, I didn't tell anybody where I was going. So I don't even know if anybody's looking for me. And I haven't been able to find my way out. I am lost. And I've got two sandwiches and two canteens of water. That's all I have left. And I'm lost. And I come across another guy in the middle of this wilderness, and he's lost. He doesn't know where he's at. He doesn't know if anybody's coming looking for him. He's in the same situation I'm in. We are lost. We take an inventory of what we have. We're going to kind of team up here and work together to try to find our way out of here. We take an inventory of what we've got. I've got two sandwiches and two canteens of water. They are mine. I own them. He has nothing. Let me ask the question this way. What could I do? Somebody tell me one thing I could do. I could give him half of what I've got. I could give him one sandwich and one canteen of water. What else could I do? I could keep it. What you said? Biggie says I could keep it for myself. Let him fend for himself. What else could I do? I could give it all to him, right? All right, those are the three most obvious things I could do. Now let me ask a different question. What should I do? Now, how does that question throw a little different light on the circumstance? I don't know if it's this way all the time, so you can kind of think it through and let me know what you think. But when we start using the word should instead of could, we add a moral dimension to the question. Because if I should do something, I am morally obligated to do it. So, let's ask my question. What should I do? If anything. Share? You think I'm morally obligated to share my sandwich with this guy? Okay, I think so. I think so. I think if it means that I might not live another 2 days or 3 days or whatever, if it means I might die, there's a moral obligation right there in that circumstance to give. Ever think about the way things are in the movies? You know, if you're watching a Western and the two guys find themselves out in the middle of the desert with a sandwich and a canteen, the good guy does what? He shares. The bad guy does what? He takes it all for himself, right? That's how it's always portrayed. There is a moral obligation there. Now, let me add another situation to the question. What if, in addition to my two sandwiches and my two canteens of water, I have $100,000 in my pocket? All right? He doesn't have any money. I've got $100,000 in my pocket. What should I do with my sandwiches and my water and my $100,000? There you go. Start a fire. Whew. I'd have to go without a sandwich day or two before I do that. I think I should give him a sandwich and give him my water and not tell him anything about my $100,000. If it looks like I'm going to die, and he's still pretty healthy, I'll tell him, hey, I got some money here. Tell him what to do with it. That money is not his. I'm not obliged to give it to him because it's not going to help him. All right? What about this situation? What if I spend $2,000 a month to live on? It takes me $2,000 a month to live. And it's, I mean, we're just going to use some set things. Don't take into account emergencies, all kinds of stuff. $2,000 a month to live. And my neighbor down the road is a widow lady, and it takes her $2,000 a month to live. Okay, we're identical situations as far as what it takes us to live. My income is $5,000 a month. So every month, I've got $3,000 of discretionary income, I guess you'd call it. I don't need it to live on. Her income is $2,000 a month. She's living. She has got everything she wants. But I've got an extra $3,000 a month that I can do something with. What could I do with that extra $3,000 a month? Okay, let me name you a few things. I could go to the casino. I could load up on lottery tickets. I could buy me a new car. I could buy me a four-wheel drive tractor. I could do all kinds of things. Occasionally, I might have the thought I could give some to my neighbor. Okay? Next question, what should I do? Do you think in this situation I should share with my neighbor? Am I obligated to share with my neighbor who doesn't need help? I don't think so. But that's a little harder question to answer, isn't it? Am I obliged to make me and my neighbor equal? Because the first thing you know, I've got another neighbor over here. Another neighbor over there, and a cousin over here. Okay? If there's not a need, I'm not obliged to give what I own to someone. But somewhere between that situation and the situation of me being lost in the wilderness, where I am obliged, there's all this other stuff in between there that's closer to one than the other. Those decisions are sometimes hard to make. So what should we do? I don't know. I don't know about you. I don't know what your situation is. I don't hardly know what mine is. But I know one thing for me. When I read this story, Jesus said, this woman gave all that she had. Here is giving. You want to see giving? Here's giving. He would never have looked at my life and held it up for an example of giving. I give. But my giving has yet to hurt. Let's pray. Father, we live in a rich land. I feel the warmth in this room. And I enjoy it. I enjoy the comforts that I have. So much so that, Lord God, I would be hard-pressed to give them up if you ask me to. I'm afraid you would have to take them. God, help us to be wise in our giving. But God, help us to be eager to give. God, I don't know how this message could be applied to everyone's life. God, we came across it in our study of Mark, and here it is. God, would you help us that we might be Christ-like in our giving?